Chapter 5. Refuted by his advancing prosperity and importance, Mr. Freely was becoming a person of influence in the parish. He was found useful as an overseer of the poor, having great firmness in enduring other people's pain, which firmness, he said, was due to his great benevolence. He always did what was good for people in the end. Mr. Chaloner had even selected him as clergyman's churchwarden, for he was a very handy man, and much more of Mr. Chaloner's opinion in everything about church business than the older parishioners. Mr. Freely was a very regular churchman, but at the Oyster Club he was sometimes a little free in his conversation, more than hinting at a life of sultanic self-indulgence which he had passed in the West Indies, shaking his head now and then and smiling rather bitterly, as men are wont to do when they intimate that they have become a little too wise to be instructed about a world which has long been flat and stale to them. For some time he was quite general in his attentions to the fair sex, combining the gallantries of a ladies' man with a severity of criticism on the person and manners of absent belles, which tended rather to stimulate in the feminine breast the desire to conquer the approval of so fastidious a judge. Nothing short of the very best in the department of female charms and virtues could suffice to kindle the ardor of Mr. Edward Freely, who had become familiar with the most luxuriant and dazzling beauty in the West Indies. It may seem incredible that a confectioner should have ideas and conversation so much resembling those to be met with in a higher walk of life, but it must be remembered that he had not merely traveled, he had also bow legs and a sallow, small-featured visage, so that nature herself had stamped him for a fastidious connoisseur of the fair sex. At last, however, it seemed clear that Cupid had found a sharper arrow than usual, and that Mr. Freely's heart was pierced. It was the general talk among the young people at Grimworth. But was it really love, and not rather ambition? Miss Fulilove, the timber merchant's daughter, was quite sure that if she were Miss Penny Palfrey, she would be cautious. It was not a good sign when men looked so much above themselves for a wife. For it was no less a person than Miss Penelope Palfrey, second daughter of the Mr. Palfrey who farmed his own land, that had attracted Mr. Freely's peculiar regard, and conquered his fastidiousness. And no wonder, for the ideal, as exhibited in the finest waxwork, was perhaps never so closely approached by the real as in the person of the pretty Penelope. Her yellowish flaxen hair did not curl naturally, I admit, but its bright crisp ringlets were such smooth, perfect miniature tubes, that you would have longed to pass your little finger through them, and feel their soft elasticity. She wore them in a crop, for in those days, when society was in a healthier state, young ladies wore crops long after they were 20, and Penelope was not yet 19. Like the waxen ideal, she had round blue eyes, and round nostrils in her little nose, and teeth such as the ideal would be seen to have, if it ever showed them. Altogether, she was a small, round thing, as neat as a pink and white double daisy, and as guileless, for I hope it does not argue guile in a pretty damsel of 19, to think that she should like to have a beau and be engaged, when her elder sister had already been in that position a year and a half. To be sure, there was young Towers always coming to the house, but Penny felt convinced he only came to see her brother, for he never had anything to say to her, and never offered her his arm, and was as awkward and silent as possible. It is not unlikely that Mr. Freely had early been smitten by Penny's charms, as brought under his observation at church, but he had to make his way in society a little before he could come into nearer contact with them, and even after he was well received in Grimworth families, it was a long while before he could converse with Penny otherwise than in an incidental meeting at Mr. Luff's. It was not so easy to get invited to Long Meadows, the residence of the Palfreys, for though Mr. Palfrey had been losing money of late years, not being able quite to recover his feet after the terrible murrain which forced him to borrow, his family were far from considering themselves on the same level even as the old established tradespeople with whom they visited. The greatest people, even kings and queens, must visit with somebody, and the equals of the great are scarce. They were especially scarce at Grimworth, which, as I have before observed, was a low parish, mentioned with the most scornful brevity in gazetteers. Even the great people there were far behind those of their own standing in other parts of this realm. Mr. Pelfrey's farmyard doors had the paint all worn off them, and the front garden walks had long been merged in a general weediness. Still, his father had been called Squire Pelfrey, and had been respected by the last Grimworth generation as a man who could afford to drink too much in his own house. Pretty Penny was not blind to the fact that Mr. Freely admired her, and she felt sure that it was he who had sent her a beautiful valentine. But her sister seemed to think so lightly of him, all young ladies think lightly of the gentleman to whom they are not engaged, that Penny never dared mention him, and trembled and blushed whenever they met him, thinking of the valentine, which was very strong in its expressions, and which she felt guilty of knowing by heart. A man who had been to the Indies, and knew the sea so well, seemed to her a sort of public character, almost like Robinson Crusoe or Captain Cook, and Penny had always wished her husband to be a remarkable personage, likely to be put in Mangnall's Questions, with which register of the immortals as he had become acquainted during her 1 year at a boarding school. Only it seemed strange that a remarkable man should be a confectioner and pastry cook, and this anomaly quite disturbed Penny's dreams. Her brothers, she knew, laughed at men who couldn't sit on horseback well, and called them tailors, but her brothers were very rough, and were quite without that power of anecdote which made Mr. Freely such a delightful companion. He was a very good man, she thought, for she had heard him say at Mr. Luff's, one day, that he always wished to do his duty in whatever state of life he might be placed, and he knew a great deal of poetry, for one day he had repeated a verse of a song. She wondered if he had made the words of the valentine. It ended in this way. Without thee, it is pain to live, but with thee, it were sweet to die. Poor Mr. Freely, her father would very likely object, she felt sure he would, for he always called Mr. Freely Hat Sugar Plum Fellow. Oh, it was very cruel, when true love was crossed in that way, and all because Mr. Freely was a confectioner. Well, Penny would be true to him, for all that, and since his being a confectioner gave her an opportunity of showing her faithfulness, she was glad of it. Edward Freely was a pretty name, much better than John Towers. Young Towers had offered her a rose out of his buttonhole the other day, blushing very much, but she refused it, and thought with delight how much Mr. Freely would be comforted if he knew her firmness of mind. Poor little Penny, the days were so very long among the daisies on the grazing farm, and thought it so active how was it possible that the inward drama should not get the start of the outward? I have known young ladies, much better educated, and with an outward world diversified by instructive lectures, to say nothing of literature and highly developed fancy work, who have spun a cocoon of visionary joys and sorrows for themselves, just as Penny did. Her elder sister Letitia, who had a prouder style of beauty, and a more worldly ambition, was engaged to a wool factor, who came all the way from Cattleton to see her. And everybody knows that a wool factor takes a very high rank, sometimes driving a double-bodied gig. Letty's notions got higher every day, and Penny never dared to speak of her cherished griefs to her lofty sister, never dared to propose that they should call at Mr. Freely's to buy liquorice, though she had prepared for such an incident by mentioning a slight sore throat. So as he had to pass the shop on the other side of the marketplace, and reflect, with a suppressed sigh, that behind those pink and white jars somebody was thinking of her tenderly, unconscious of the small space that divided her from him. And it was quite true that, when business permitted, Mr. Freely thought a great deal of Penny. He thought her prettiness comparable to the loveliest things in confectionery. He judged her to be of submissive temper, likely to wait upon him as well as if he had been a negress, and to be silently terrified when his liver made him irritable. and he considered the Pelfrey family quite the best in the parish, possessing marriageable daughters. On the whole, he thought her worthy to become Mrs. Edward Freely, and all the more so, because it would probably require some ingenuity to win her. Mr. Pelfrey was capable of horsewhipping a too rash pretender to his daughter's hand, and, moreover, he had three tall sons. It was clear that a suitor would be at a disadvantage with such a family, unless travel and natural acumen had given him a countervailing power of contrivance. And the first idea that occurred to him in the matter was that Mr. Pelfrey would object less if he knew that the Freelys were a much higher family than his own. It had been foolish modesty in him hitherto to conceal the fact that a branch of the Freelys held a manor in Yorkshire, and to shut up the portrait of his great-uncle the Admiral, instead of hanging it up where a family portrait should be hung over the mantelpiece in the parlor. Admiral Freely, K. C.C. B., once placed in this conspicuous position, was seen to have had one arm only, and one eye in these points resembling the heroic Nelson, while a certain pallid insignificance of feature confirmed the relationship between himself and his grandnephew. Next, Mr. Freely was seized with an irrepressible ambition to possess Mrs. Pelfrey's receipt for Braun, hers being pronounced on all hands to be superior to his own, as he informed her in a very flattering letter carried by his errand boy. Now Mrs. Pelfrey, like other geniuses, wrought by instinct rather than by rule, and possessed no receipts indeed, despised all people who used them, observing that people who pickled by book must pickle by weights and measures, and such nonsense. As for herself, her weights and measures were the tip of her finger, and the tip of her tongue, and if you went near, why, of course, for dry goods like flour and spice, you went by handfuls and pinches, and for wet, there was a middle-sized jug quite the best thing, whether for much or little, because you might know how much a teacupful was if you'd got any use of your senses, and you might be sure it would take five middle-sized jugs to make a gallon. Knowledge of this kind is like Titian's coloring, difficult to communicate. And as Mrs. Pelfrey, once remarkably handsome, had now become rather stout and asthmatical, and scarcely ever left home, her oral teaching could hardly be given anywhere except at Long Meadows. Even a matron is not insusceptible to flattery, and the prospect of a visitor whose great object would be to listen to her conversation was not without its charms to Mrs. Pelfrey. Since there was no receipt to be sent in reply to Mr. Freely's humble request, she called on her more docile daughter, Penny, to write a note, telling him that her mother would be glad to see him and talk with him on Braun any day that he could call at Long Meadows. Penny obeyed with a trembling hand, thinking how wonderfully things came about in this world. In this way, Mr. Freely got himself introduced into the home of the Pelfreys, and notwithstanding a tendency in the male part of the family to jeer at him a little as icky and bow-legged, he presently established his position as an accepted and frequent guest. Young Towers looked at him with increasing disgust when they met at the house on a Sunday, and secretly longed to try his ferret upon him, as a piece of vermin which that valuable animal would be likely to tackle with unhesitating vigor. But so blind sometimes are parents, neither Mr. nor Mrs. Pelfrey suspected that Penny would have anything to say to a tradesman of questionable rank whose youthful bloom was much withered. Young Towers, they thought, had an eye to her, and that was likely enough to be a match someday, but Penny was a child at present. And all the while Penny was imagining the circumstances under which Mr. Freely would make her an offer. Perhaps down by the row of damson trees, when they were in the garden before tea, perhaps by letter, in which case, how would the letter begin? Dearest Penelope? Or, why dear Miss Penelope, or straight off, without dear anything, as seemed the most natural when people were embarrassed. But, however he might make the offer, she would not accept it without her father's consent. She would always be true to Mr. Freely, but she would not disobey her father. for Penny was a good girl, though some of her female friends were afterwards of opinion that it spoke ill for her not to have felt an instinctive repugnance to Mr. Freely. But he was cautious, and wished to be quite sure of the ground he trod on. His views on marriage were not entirely sentimental, but were as duly mingled with considerations of what would be advantageous to a man in his position, as if he had had a very large amount of money spent on his education. He was not a man to fall in love in the wrong place, and so he applied himself quite as much to conciliate the favor of the parents as to secure the attachment of Penny. Mrs. Palfrey had not been inaccessible to flattery, and her husband, being also of mortal mold, would not, it might be hoped, be proof against rum, that very fine Jamaica rum of which Mr. Freely expected always to have a supply sent him from Jamaica. It was not easy to get Mr. Palfrey into the parlor behind the shop, where a mild back street light fell on the features of the heroic admiral. But by getting hold of him rather late one evening as he was about to return home from Grimworth, the aspiring lover succeeded in persuading him to sup on some collared beef which, after Mrs. Palfrey's brawn, he would find the very best of cold eating. From that hour Mr. Freely felt sure of success. Being in privacy with an estimable man old enough to be his father, and being rather lonely in the world, it was natural he should unbosom himself a little on subjects which he could not speak of in a mixed circle, especially concerning his expectations from his uncle in Jamaica, who had no children, and loved his nephew Edward better than anyone else in the world, though he had been so hurt at his leaving Jamaica that he had threatened to cut him off with a shilling. However, he had since written to state his full forgiveness, and though he was an eccentric old gentleman, and could not bear to give away money during his life, Mr. Edward Freely could show Mr. Palfrey a letter which declared, plainly enough, who would be the affectionate uncle's heir. Mr. Palfrey actually saw the letter, and could not help admiring the spirit of the nephew who declared that such brilliant hopes as these made no difference to his conduct. He should work at his humble business, and make his modest fortune at it all the same. If the Jamaica estate was to come to him well and good, it was nothing very surprising for one of the Freely family to have an estate left him, considering the lands that family had possessed in time gone by, nay, still possessed in the Northumberland branch. Would not Mr. Palfrey take another glass of rum? And also look at the last year's balance of the accounts? Mr. Freely was a man who cared to possess personal virtues, and did not pique himself on his family, though some men would. We know how easily the great Leviathan may be led, when once there is a hook in his nose, or a bridle in his jaws. Mr. Palfrey was a large man, but, like Leviathans, his bulk went against him when once he had taken a turning. He was not a mercurial man, who easily changed his point of view. Enough. Before 2 months were over, he had given his consent to Mr. Freely's marriage with his daughter Penny, and having hit on a formula by which he could justify it, fenced off all doubts and objections, his own included. The formula was this. I'm not a man to put my head up an entry before I know where it leads. Little Penny was very proud and fluttering, but hardly so happy as she expected to be in an engagement. She wondered if young Towers cared much about it, for he had not been to the house lately, and her sister and brothers were rather inclined to sneer than to sympathize. Grimworth rang with the news. All men extolled Mr. Freely's good fortune, while the women, with the tender solicitude characteristic of the sex, wished the marriage might turn out well. While affairs were at this triumphant juncture, Mr. Freely one morning observed that a stone carver who had been breakfasting in the eating room had left a newspaper behind. It was the 10th Shire Gazette, and 10th Shire being a county not unknown to Mr. Freely, he felt some curiosity to glance over it, and especially over the advertisements. A slight flush came over his face as he read. It was produced by the following announcement. F. David Foe, son of Jonathan Foe, late of Gilsbrook, will apply at the office of Mr. Strutt, attorney, of Rodham. He will hear of something to his advantage. Father's dead, exclaimed Mr. Freely, involuntarily. And he have left me a legacy? Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.